From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This month, Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Illinois Department of Human Services made the announcement that the Choate Mental Health and Developmental Center in Anna, Illinois, will be repurposed.
Individuals with mental health struggles and intellectual and developmental disabilities deserve respect. They deserve dignity and the highest quality of care to assist them in living healthy, fulfilling lives.
Choate is in Anna, again, in far southern Illinois. That's about 30 minutes south of Carbondale. And for years, there have been allegations of abuse at the facility. The latest were documented last year in a report from the news outlet ProPublica. The 270-bed facility opened in 1873, serving Illinoisans with a range of intellectual and developmental disabilities, mental illnesses, and sometimes a combination of the above. The Pritzker administration announced the repurposing in the wake of the ProPublica report, but not everyone is pleased with the decision. Joining us now to talk about the repurposing of the center is one of the reporters who worked on that ProPublica investigative piece into the allegations of abuse, and that is Molly Parker of the Southern Illinoisan. Molly, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
We're also joined by Stacey Ashman, Vice President at Equip for Equality, an organization that advocates for the advancement of civil rights for people with disabilities. Stacey, welcome back to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
And last, but certainly not least, with us also is Latrice Williams. She is a former resident at Choate. Latrice, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And I want to say we had hoped to also have a parent of a Choate resident who favors keeping the facility open, largely as is. They ultimately decided not to join us, but we'll do our best to make sure their perspective is still represented today. We'll also have a statement from the AFSCME union, which represents a lot of workers at Choate. And with that, I want to invite you to join us by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can send us an email. The address is talk@21stshow.org. Again, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, Molly, I want to begin with you. Can you just remind us, take us through some of your reporting and what you learned last year?
Yeah, I worked with Beth Hunstorfer of Capital News Illinois, and I'm Molly with Lee Enterprises, which owns the Southern Illinois and other newspapers in Illinois. And we were both working separately on stories when there were a series of arrests at Choate, including some higher level arrests of administrators that were those administrators' charges were later cleared. I want to make note of, but there were a number of arrests of frontline workers and others for abuse allegations, and there were so many that it really raised a question of what's going on here, and that's what led us into looking to see the history of abuse situations there, and certainly there are sadly people who are abused in you know facilities like this in the community in their homes. We know that, but what we were specifically looking at is the degree to which the state was properly doing oversight and monitoring, and why some of the employees who have been accused of some of these serious situations remained on the payroll, and the volume of it, and the care provided to folks. So we produced a series of, probably about 10 stories now so far, looking at various issues of the treatment and care provided to people who live at Choate.
Molly, can you give us, the word abuse is so broad. Can you give us a few examples that stood out to you in your reporting of what we mean when we use the word abuse in this context?
Sure. And of course, it goes without saying that folks deserve, anybody deserves to live free from any sort of abuse, whether that's verbal, mental, or physical. But the types of abuses that we were covering, some of them were frankly chilling. There were cases of people who were accused of having residents restrained with, you know, mechanical restraints where they cannot move and then being beaten in those situations or threatened with physical abuse. One case, we had a 911 call that was accidentally placed while they were restraining a resident who you could hear employees telling this person that they were, you know, going to break their thumb if they didn't shut up and cussing at them and things like that. So Some of the, just the way that the staff talk to people is abusive, but certainly the physical acts of punching, shoving, hitting were just unacceptable. Certainly it's all unacceptable, but at the volume at which it was occurring really was shocking.
Latrice Williams, I want to bring you into the conversation now. And to the extent you're comfortable talking about it, and we can move on if you're not, but can you say how you came to be a resident at Choate?
Yes. My adopted mom passed when I was 16, and I was already in the system because I was adopted, so I mean, in DCFS care. And so after she passed, I didn't have nowhere to go. So I went to a group home in Bartlett, Illinois. It's called Maryville Academy, and then I got discharged because you can only live there so long, you know. Then I went to a CILA community home, group home, I guess it's called, like independent, like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was having trouble there, so they let me go. And I was in the hospital, St. Mary's Hospital, for 100 and some days to get placed. And so Choate finally said, okay, we'll take Latrice. So the hospital transported me to Choate, 5 hours away from, I was in Chicago. And when I got there, basically what they told me in the interview, it was nothing like what they told me, you know? So as me, like, is this really like, what I'm experiencing, like what you told me on the phone, is nothing compared to what I'm seeing, you know?
What was your daily routine like there?
We was in the cottages at the time, like little homes at the time, and we didn't have no activities. We didn't do anything. Like, we get into a lot of arguments, fight, because we was bored. We didn't have no activities, no groups, no nothing. So we just had a lot of free time on our hand, picking fights with individuals, staff picking fights with us, and it was crazy.
What you ultimately decided to leave? Why did you decide to leave Choate?
I've been there 4 years, and it didn't get better. It only got worse. The staff broke my finger. I had a black eye. They pulled my hair, drugged me in the hallway. They pressed charges on me because the staff was hurting. Like, she said that I pulled her down by her neck or something. And I said, no, that wasn't true. And I had to go to court and stuff. And they false document stuff, like saying that I did something, but I didn't. And it was just so insane. I sent a video that a staff was hurting a patient, like, on my phone.
Yeah. Well,
and
yeah,
it's so it don't need to be open. Like, it needs to be shut down. And I'm trying to reach the governor now, because even if he moved 162 people, what about the other 100 and something? So you're going to leave them, the other 100, to get abused? You know,
Latrice, thank you. Yeah, I just want to say thank you for sharing your experience, and I'm sorry you went through that. Let me bring Stacey Ashman into the conversation now, who's vice president at Equip for Equality, the civil rights organization for people with disabilities. Stacey, how does Latrice's particular experiences resonate with the overall picture of Choate that you understand?
Well, you know, our group will go to Choate at various times, and have gone 6 times since October. And we hear a lot of the same stories. So what Latrice went through is not unheard of at Choate, and we still see the concerns that she stated about there not being things that are happening on the unit in terms of activity. So it does create sometimes a pretty chaotic environment. These were the same findings that we had back in 2005. So it's, you know, we definitely agree with Latrice that there shouldn't be people that are left behind based on a particular diagnosis that they have or some other court complications related to being on the forensic unit.
So, Molly, what do we know about what this repurposing is going to look like?
Well, as Stacy and Latrice said, there's going to be a movement of a certain number of people. I think the governor's office and IDHS, so they're starting with about 120 or so folks who are on their what they call civil units, who are there voluntarily, which I think is important to note. Most folks are there voluntarily, including some of the people who are staying at SHOTE. There is a smaller number of people who are in that what they call forensic area, which are people who entered through the criminal court system. You know, they've been found unable to stand trial, that sort of thing, and in need of treatment. But a lot of folks are there, you know, voluntarily. I use that a little liberally because it's either on their own or with a parent or other guardian type figure. But they're going to talk about moving out 120 people starting immediately. They'll have about 3 years to find alternative placements. You know, they've talked about those folks having the option of moving to other state developmental centers or to community type placements. Obviously, there's a big push in the advocacy community and to help find people placement in the community. I think the pushback you're seeing from the parents groups and some others is saying, well, we don't think those placements are adequate. So I think you'll see that discussion continue to play out. And a closer look in general at the Illinois system and its ability to serve people in the least restrictive environment at which the law requires that the least restrictive environment that they want to be in. And so there's going to be some big questions, I think, about the capacity of the system, where there are shortcomings, what the state's plan is to fill them in helping these folks move. And in the meantime, they're talking about expanding out the psychiatric hospital. There's a more traditional mental health hospital there for about 50 beds. And I think they may look at expanding that because there's been lawsuits with folks, you know, in jail, sitting, waiting for treatment and placement that are just lingering. And there's been some major issues with that they're trying to solve at the same time.
Yeah. Stacey Ashman, let me ask you about, so the idea is to move into these independent living in the community, right? I think the phrase that Molly used there was least restrictive. Can you say more about that and how Illinois has done with meeting that promise in other circumstances or in the past?
Well, there are quite a few. Yeah, there are actually more people living in the community integrated living arrangements, also called SILAs, or our group homes, like Patrice had mentioned. There are around up to 10,000 people already living in them, so there are about 1,600 people in state-operated developmental centers. So there are quite a number of people that are currently being successfully served in those settings. They are, there are obviously problems with some providers, and Equip for Equality does also advocate on behalf of individuals when there are problems with certain providers, and also does conduct investigations as well of community providers. We continue to advocate for good oversight of the different settings. There are multiple layers of oversight of the community settings as well. And then also the state does recognize the need to have both more of these settings for people so they do have choice to live in them. There are about 15,000 people on a waiting list who are already in the community and wanting a community wanting services through the community Medicaid services. And also people that are in the state-operated developmental centers they don't have to wait. So they aren't on a waiting list. They're all eligible to go to a community setting. And the state is in the process of working on homes that also will have some specialized staff, so maybe people who have had some struggles in the community before, and that's what led to them being in the state facility, to make sure that the transition is successful. That's all, of course, things that are in the works. So we are hopeful that these things will be built in sufficient time for people to be able to exercise their choice as quickly as possible.
Molly, can you say more about some of the parents groups or parents in the group, at least, that and what their objections are in terms of this repurposing?
Yeah, each facility, and there are seven developmental centers in Illinois, has a Friends of, or at least most of them do. And the Friends of SHOTE, it's a parent and other supporters organization that in the case of Schoed and many of the other facilities, also advocates for keeping these facilities open because there is a debate and a tension about whether Illinois is an outlier. Certainly, Illinois is an outlier, I should say, unequivocally, in terms of the number of institutions and beds it keeps open in these larger state-run facilities. Many states have closed them down. There's a lot of conversation about, you know, what is the best way to provide care and to provide it in a way in which people are not segregated and are integrated into their communities. When you talk to the parents group, though, they're very adamant that their loved ones cannot succeed in the community homes as they exist today. That is their point of view. I think that there's been a lot of changes in some of these community homes over the last 20 years, but also I think, as Stacey's pointing out, the state has improvements that can be made in terms of making sure there are places where people who have more more needs or more behaviors can thrive. And, you know, and in the groups, the parents' views is that they just believe this is the best setting for their loved ones.
Best setting for them. Yeah. We're going to have to take a break, and we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. More on the repurposing of the Choate Center in Southern Illinois. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are beginning today with a conversation about the repurposing of the Choate Mental Health and Developmental Center in Anna, Illinois, in Southern Illinois. That's about 30 miles south of Carbondale. We're talking about this with Molly Parker of Lee Enterprises, which owns a number of newspapers across the state, including the Southern Illinoisan. And she, along with another reporter, Beth Hunsdorfer from Capital News Illinois, has been investigating allegations of abuse at Choate through ProPublica. We're also joined by Stacey Ashman, who is with Equip for Equality, the civil rights organization for people with disabilities, and Latrice Williams, who is a former resident at Choate and welcomes the repurposing, if not outright closure. It's interesting. It's not being closed. That requires a different process through state government. The state has tried in the past to close developmental centers and found a lot of opposition to that, especially from some parents' groups as well as state workers. And I do want to share now, we had reached out to the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Council 13, the union that represents a lot of workers at Choate. Executive Director Roberta Lynch sent this statement. "We're extremely concerned about the fate of Choate Developmental Center residents and the employees who make Choate home for them. We intend to make certain that the well-being of the more than 200 residents of the Choate home is given the foremost consideration now and in the future. AFSCME will work to protect the jobs of Choate's dedicated and compassionate employees, and our union will continue to our close alliance with the Friends of Choate Family Group to ensure that no resident is forced out of their home without their consent." Stacey Ashman with Equip for Equality, can you respond to what AFSCME had to say there? What do you think of that?
Well, I definitely agree that the individuals who live there should be given a choice about where to go. I would say that the people that we talk to, and when we go, we talk to a lot of individuals one-on-one, and unprompted, they will say that they want to leave. That is at least 95-98% of the people that we talk to, they want to go. So this notion that a large majority of people there, or even half the people there, view Choate as their home, don't think is correct. Most of those people we talk to also say they want to live in the community. They want to be in the community. That's one big complaint, actually, for people at Choate, is they don't get out off the campus very often, maybe once or twice a month at max. And with that, you know, we also think it's very important that these individuals' voices are heard, even if they have guardians. Guardians are required under the law to follow their ward's preference on where they live unless they're reasonably certain it will result in substantial harm to the people. So obviously moving to a licensed provider setting does not seem to be the type of situation where one could be reasonably certain the individual will be subject to substantial harm. So we really think it's important that the individual's voices are heard. And I also, I guess, another thing that, you know, I've read, and I'm not sure if the union statement mentioned this this time around, but, you know, there's a lot of people also at SHOT who are not from the area. A lot of them coming from Northern Illinois, Central Illinois. It's a minority who actually have families or guardians that live in the vicinity of SHOT.
Well, Latrice, that sounds like that describes you, right? You were coming from the Chicago area. Were you, did you feel alienated in that part, far southern Illinois?
Yes, I did. I was homesick for many weeks or months, I should say.
Yeah. What was the, you know, the people you were living with? What was their attitude to the best? You know, I know you can speak for yourself, but what did you hear from people? Did people, were they interested in leaving, or were they, you know, prefer to stay put?
Majority wanted to leave, but majority wanted to stay. So 50-50. And on my perspective, staff were trying to convince them. So, like, the AFSCME people or union, they just saying that because they want to have money coming in. It's all about money, about show. They make thousands, millions, more than millions of what other people making on the job, you know? So for that statement, I believe that they just put it in there. They don't know for a fact. They're just doing that so they can have a job and still make income, you know?
You've lived in a, you mentioned you lived.
I know for a fact. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just saying you lived in a group home setting as well. How did that compare to living at SHOT versus living in that sort of more community setting?
I really liked the group home better. Staff was not abusing me, and we had outings, and we used to go on walks by ourselves, you know, like walking up and down. They take on a lot of outings. We had game night. We had a lot of stuff. We had groups to learn how to deal with our anger and management and what to expect if we leave, to get discharged, how to manage stuff on our own, you know. But show is the total opposite. Like, and I feel very bad for the individuals because it happens on the daily. It's not just, oh, 1 or 2 days, it's over. It's daily. And show have many prompts to fix their mess up. They had told them they need to install cameras. They said they want to put them outside the building. That's not going to help. The abuse is happening inside. Why would you put cameras outside of the building? You know? So Now they want to cry, but it's too late to cry. Y'all have multiple attempts to get y'all act together, and now that y'all see that the governor's finna move, it's all, oh, no, we're going to fix it. Y'all have multiple chances to fix it. And I just think it needs to be shut down from my perspective.
Well, thank you for sharing your perspective. Stacey Ashman, let me ask you, what has been the, why has this process unfolded over such a long period of time? You mentioned that 2005 report. That's almost two decades ago. That people have known there are these sorts of issues. What has been the holdup?
Well, you know, these problems are over multiple administrations. It can be a very political issue. When Jacksonville and Murray were announced to be closed, it sparked a lot of litigation, especially surrounding the closure of Murray. A lot of, you know, advocacy by the employees union and the parents associations to try to keep it open. So it becomes a very politically fraught issue. So we do really applaud the governor for taking this step at this time. Sure, we would have liked it to happen a long time ago, but it's better to do something now than to keep this going. And also at the same time, we appreciate the governor recognizing this is also a civil and human rights issue. It's not just about the awful reports of abuse and neglect, which are, of course, an important reason to close the place, but also because individuals deserve a right to be part of the community.
Molly, we're coming to the end of our time together. Molly Parker with Lee Enterprises and reported this for ProPublica. What happens next? What's next in this story?
Well, I think for us as reporters, and of course others have their own interest in this investment in this topic. For us as reporters, I think we'll be examining Illinois' system of care across the board for people with developmental disabilities and looking at, you know, why is it an outlier in terms of these facilities? What has happened in other states where they've closed them? And trying to get to the bottom a little bit more of some of these debates about why Illinois has been a holdout in keeping the facilities open and what direction they're willing to go in. Abuses do happen, of course, in community homes as well. It's never acceptable, no matter the location of where it happens. And then there are these broader questions about, you know, if you're going to be that lighter, if you're going to say, well, this is, you know, what we want to be, the state that operates these large centers, then it seems like you would want to make sure that you're operating them the very best that you can. And we're seeing some of these same issues at SHOP playing out in other facilities as well, to different degrees at different ones. And so I think we'll be taking a close look at, you know, what's going on across the system in terms of the state's ability to provide adequate, appropriate, you know, humane help to folks to live their best life where they want to be.
And this is a story. This is not the first time we've talked about this on the 21st show, and I'm sure we will continue to have these conversations with the many different perspectives out there on this topic. Molly Parker, Stacey Ashman, and Latrice Williams, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.